Yes, it's that time of the week where we talk all things pets, and I'm joined by Cheryl Shaw and Dr. David Tabrett. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And great to see you. Now, Cheryl, I saw your badge today and you've got little sunglasses on. So what are we talking about today?
Okay, you've got to put those sunnies on when you're sunbaking. So I'm going to be talking about why do dogs sunbake?
Oh, just dogs or cats as well?
Oh, cats do as well. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and...
to get a good tan or
you'll have to wait.
I'll have to wait. Yeah. Oh no.
It's a surprise. Mm. And David, do you want to talk about AI?
Well, not artificial insemination.
I wasn't even going there.
Vets do. No, artificial intelligence and why Dr. Google is mostly wrong.
Ooh, that's a good topic. Mm. So all right, we'll get to that shortly. And we've got Jocelyn from Quarrabalong on the phone. Hi Jocelyn, how can we help you?
Oh, good morning. Yes, I've got three dogs. Mm-hmm. They're all Kelpies. The little one is a Kelpie Cross Coolie. They're all wormed at the same time, but the little one, who's the girl, the other two are boys, still, like, drags her bottom along the grass like a bum shuffle, like she's itchy. And yep. I'm just wondering why she does that when she's wormed regularly. Has it become a habit or is there... some other issue going on with her.
Mm. And how old is she?
Five.
Okay. And how long has this been going on for?
Oh, probably the past year or so.
Yep. Well, we do see this behaviour pretty frequently, actually. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of my dogs did this morning on the rug in our living room. I was not happy about it.
At least mine does it outside.
Yeah, yeah, they do that too, but it can be very annoying.
Yeah.
You kind of hit the nail on the head saying, you know, are they itchy around that area?
Mm.
And some dogs will do it as a habit, but I do think there is an underlying cause in almost every case. And you mentioned about worming. That certainly could be one possible cause, but it's probably the least frequent cause that we would see, I would say. And partly that's because most people are worming their dogs regularly anyway.
Mm.
We can see probably the next least likely cause is allergies.
Yeah.
So some dogs that will develop allergies from grass contact, things like that, can also get itchiness around that area. And they may not easily be able to, you know, chew that area or something so that they could do the scooting. But the more common reasons we see is they could be itching due to fleas.
Right.
So we've always got to make sure we keep up good flea control.
Mm-hmm.
And it's doubly important right at the moment because we're really in the midst now of our, you know, temperature going up, bit of humidity, and this is when fleas and also importantly paralysis ticks.
Yep.
So our preventatives almost always cover both the fleas plus the paralysis ticks. So it's really important to keep that up. And when you've got a number of dogs, it becomes even more so because the life cycle of fleas can move through those dogs and you've got to have prevention. But the number one reason that we see for this behaviour is because their anal glands become blocked or impacted. So on either side of the anus are two glands, and if I'm looking at them like a clock face, it's 4 and 8 o'clock. And whenever they go to the toilet and pass a stool, these glands leave a scent and it tells other dogs, you know, where they were.
Mm.
But for various reasons, these glands can become blocked, okay? The most common reason we see is that our dogs are not eating a diet that has adequate insoluble fiber.
Right.
So just like us, fiber comes, when we consume it, it comes in two forms, soluble and insoluble. And it's the insoluble fibre that's necessary for good lower bowel or large bowel health. And ultimately it helps to form the stool or their poos so that when they pass through, they're actually squeezing and emptying these glands.
Yeah.
So insoluble fibre, if you were going to add it into a diet, it would be things like Metamucil powder or even just using things like shredded carrot, green beans, pumpkin. Is another good source. And those sort of things can be helpful to clear that through so that the next time they go to the toilet, they empty and then the dog's less b- bothered by having the impacted anal glands. Now, in some cases, though, you'll need to go see the vet.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you really don't like them, you could ask a groomer to do it for you. But a lot of vets will check these as a matter of course. And sometimes they need emptying, where we just simply will squeeze them to empty those.
Yeah.
In some particular cases, I have seen where we've actually had, you know, we can't squeeze them out. They maybe the contents of the gland, they swell up, they can get inflamed, or they're just impacted, and then we often have to anaesthetise the dog and pass a cannula into the gland to liquefy it and then get it out.
Right.
And in very unusual or infrequent cases, we may do surgery, but that carries some complications. So in summary, the things I'd be really focusing on is good flea and tick control, which you should be doing anyway.
Yes, we do do that with the worming, yes.
Yeah, and then adding in insoluble fibre, and then getting to the vet and checking, and just have a look around for any other signs of dermatitis, eczema, or itching other parts. Like, if, is she chewing a feed or anything like that?
No, I haven't seen her do that. No.
Yeah. So,
Jocelyn, there is something else, like David was saying, you can add to their diet. Psyllium husk is another one that's really good. So the psyllium husk, if you just sprinkle that on the diet, it'll actually bulk up their stool and help to massage those glands a little bit as well. But, it's one of those things that seems to be more common now, and I think it's mainly to do with diet and also how we've designed dogs these days, because we've tend to have bred in a particular way. We've tended to shorten up the dog and lift the back end of the dog up more on an angle. So often dogs like Bichons and things like that can suffer more because of they actually can't, when they're doing their motion, get that massage through the glands to help take their poo away.
Yeah.
Well, good luck with that, Jocelyn.
Well, that's great. Thank you. I'll work on the diet. And, yes, when we go to the vet for our needles and
They'll be looking forward to it.
Yes. I'll mention it.
Thanks very much, Jocelyn. Thanks for the call. Take care.
Bye.
And Cheryl, you want to talk about sunbaking dogs today?
Yeah, sunbaking dogs. This is the weather for it, isn't it? Look, when I grew up, we used to sunbake and get, you know, terribly, terribly burnt, and it's not something we want our dogs to do. But there's a few reasons why dogs go and lay outside. They have a predisposition from their ancestors to go out and lay in the sun for health benefits. So you'll notice a lot of dogs, I know my two do lay outside. Do yours lay outside, David?
Yes, sometimes.
Yeah. So the reason they do it, it helps them to maintain their basal body temperature and conserve energy. And that is a really important thing. So dogs understand that by doing that, it's actually going to aid them. It helps them It just helps with several really important factors. So what are they? One is that they feel warm and relaxed, particularly on a cold day. They'll find a nice warm spot, and like you've got the cat, Amanda, it would find a nice sunny window and lay in. But so that warmth and comfort, that makes them feel good. But there's other benefits as well. So by laying in the sun, they take in vitamin D. Now, vitamin D is really important. It's important for their muscles. It's important for all parts of their body to help the production of vitamin D helps their bones as well as their muscles. So that's a really important nutrient that they're getting from the sun. The other thing is that sunlight can help for dogs that have arthritic conditions. So those dogs with sore joints and that, you know, really find it, that, you know, they're it's hard to move, things are stiff and sore. That helps them to be a little bit more mobile. But we do need to be mindful with our elderly dogs or those dogs that are a little bit immobile, that we don't allow them to fall asleep and lay in the sun for too long. Sometimes we do have to move them on so that they're not going to get dehydrated and suffer from heat stroke. So that is important. But the sun, the warmth of the sun helps to their circulation. So when they've got really good circulation, all over their body is healthy and their skin's a lot healthier. So the sun has these major benefits. Also, their sleeping will be a lot better because of the release of serotonin into their body. They'll have better circadian rhythms, so they're going to sleep a lot better. That's something that I certainly should be doing, sitting out in the sun a bit more often. Okay. But there's A few things that we need to remember. If we have dog that has short hair, so it's got a short hair or maybe hair missing, hair patches, or around the ears and the muzzle fairly neutered out, those dogs are vulnerable to sunburn. So we need to make sure that, again, we're doing something about that. There is sunscreens or sunblocks available. Don't use yours. Make sure you go to your vet and get something that's, you know, for your canine, because we want to make sure that we're not introducing any chemicals into the dog that could be, you know, not healthy. Things like that's in our products, zinc oxide isn't good for dogs, particularly if they ingest it. But there are products available, so it's really important. The other thing is making sure that even though they are having a sunbake, that there's plenty of water available for them, so that if they are a bit, you know, sort of dehydrated, they can go and have a drink, and offer shade. We just don't want all sun. They need shaded areas. And remembering that if you go out into your yard in the morning, in the afternoon, it's in a different position, that sunshine. So we need to make sure that we've got, you know, a couple of spaces if the dog doesn't have access to inside or the veranda area, that they've got places to go to get rid of that, you know, the possibility of heat stress, particularly now our weather's starting to warm up.
It's definitely getting a lot warmer, yes. That's for sure.
Yeah. And sometimes there's another thing. Sometimes after a dog gets hot, you notice it smells more. Have you ever noticed that, David?
I'm not sure I have.
Okay. So sometimes
maybe I'm not as... my sense of smell is not as acute.
Your nasal sponges aren't absorbing much. So why it happens, when they go outside and their coats get hot, their coats actually take in the environmental odours. So if they're laying on something that's not, you know, doesn't smell so sweet. But also as the hair gets hot, the oils that are in the hair follicles actually heat up. This dissipates really quickly once they've come inside after a few minutes and they've cooled down, it goes away. But they do have a temporary heat odour, which is rather interesting. So anything put in the sun
gives
off heat.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So if you think, oh, my dog goes outside and lays in the heat and then gets smelly, it will go away.
Does that happen to people? If we lie in the sun, do we get smelly?
Probably more we get smelly armpits.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
And sunburn probably.
Yes.
Yes. Ken from Macquarie Hills, you've got a question for our Pet Chat team. You there?
Yeah, how you going? Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, all good.
I've got a Dalmatian who's, as you probably know, the vets would know, that they have a history of getting crystals in their urine.
Yep.
And he's now on Hill's prescription diet.
Yep.
We had another issue. We took him away for the weekend and he was weeing blood. Took him back to the vet on Monday, did a heap of tests on him, more money. we had another vet from the UK who'd worked on him. She's now gone back to the UK. She said, even though we've got him on the Hill's special diet, there are other things that we can give him, like there's recipes that you can make up. Like some have got eggs and capsicum and some dairy. But this other vet said, absolutely not. No treats, nothing but the prescription diet. So is that true, or is there something else that I can give him to give him a bit of variety?
So just a bit of background for everyone else who's listening is that Dalmatians have a metabolic defect in their liver, which means that there's a failure to convert a substance called purines, which are in food, and normally they're converted into a soluble nitrate product called allantoin. Dalmatians actually, because of this defect, then they bypass that and they end up producing uric acid, which is insoluble. So that's the crystals. So they're excreted into the bladder, and if the bladder is, the urine's sitting there for any period of time, they'll start to clump together, and they're very irritating, obviously, and can sometimes cause a blockage where these crystals develop into stones.
Yeah, we have the surgery, actually had to have the bladder actually cut open and drained out of it. Just looked like sand.
Yeah, that's right. That's how it comes out. So there's a couple of different ways about management. Now, with diet, there's a few different principles, but the main one is what we're trying to do, and this is where the Hill's diet, for instance, is very helpful, is that it restricts the amount of purines. Now, purines are found in different types of food. I guess broadly, you know, they're in Well, we see them in meats, and there are some veggies that they're in. I can't remember the whole list of things, but what we're trying to do is to make sure that they get adequate protein but without the purines in the diet. And so when we go with the prescription diet, that's all taken care of. So when you start to step away from that and doing something else, it's not that you're adding anything that is going to change the metabolism. It's just that you're adding another food that is low in purine. Okay.
Yeah.
And given the kind of circumstances where perhaps we're not always sure about some of these foods, and I would have to research, you know, the proposed elements in the diet to actually say, okay, what's the purine level and is that going to be a problem? And there are different types of purines as well, by the way. So rather than say you're doing anything that's actually helping the prescription diet, it's just you're adding something else in. Maybe it's a variety thing, sure, but you've always got to be aware of the risk associated with introducing purines otherwise. Now, there is some medication. So is he on the medication at all, Ken?
Yeah, he's on both the
the allopurinol?
The canned food. He's on the Hill's prescription diet.
Yeah, what about some tablets?
Not at this stage.
No. So diet's the big way to control this. But some dogs, even when you restrict the amount of purines, and because it's largely associated with proteins, you find that some dogs you just can't get that down low enough, and so then they have to go onto some medication. So it's better to go very slow, and if you're introducing foods, work with your vet about what that is, because the other thing is maybe that food, particularly in the UK, is low in purines, but over here it might be a bit high. Maybe your dog can handle it, maybe you can't. So I would go very carefully, because as you found with your experience, they can easily flip back into a crisis situation.
Yeah, well, it wasn't pleasant, I can tell you. Being a dog, he dealt with it very well, but
yeah,
I was quite upset. And we finally got away up to Bossaton Curry, and on, I think it was Saturday morning, he was having a wee, and he bled quite a fair bit of blood.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that.
I rang the vet straight away, and they said, well, just keep an eye on it. And then he'd have a few times when he was weaning quite well, but then when we did test his urine, they said, oh, there is a lot of blood.
It was full there. Yeah, it can come back really quickly. And I think just generally with any kind of problems around the urinary tract, we want to always have basic, you know, plenty of fresh water, plenty of opportunity to urinate. The longer that urine sits in the bladder, the more likely crystals are going to form. So even that kind of when you're travelling away, he can actually get a build-up of, because he's in the car for a couple of hours, that kind of thing can also impact it. So it's a tough area, but, yes, medication might be helpful, and diet, I would go very slowly. I'd be very reluctant to add anything that could trigger a bit of a crisis.
Good luck with that, Ken. All the best. Thanks for your call. Got Margaret from East Maitland on the line. Hi, Margaret. Thanks for holding. How can we help you?
Yes, our dog yesterday afternoon and again this morning has been bringing small twigs in out of the yard and just crunching them up and chewing them. I'm just wondering, is she lacking something?
Activity, I'm going to say. How old is your little dog?
She's four.
4 years old. And has she only just started doing this?
Yes, it was only yesterday.
All right, has something else changed in the house?
No, we've been going for walks. She doesn't have a big yard, and it's concreted. So, and she's not one to play with toys much.
Yeah, she assumed that she's just on a regular commercial diet.
Oh well, she has cooked chicken, fresh vegetables that I cook for her, and biscuits.
Okay, well, the biscuits will fill in the, you know, minerals and everything, so that's probably not an issue. It would almost certainly be behaviour related, which is, and the reason why I ask if anything else has happened, it could be a anxiety displacing behaviour, like something else is stressing her out and I'll just pick up this stick and chew on it and then I don't have to think about what else is going on.
Oh, okay.
So that's certainly a possibility. Otherwise, it's just, oh, I'm a bit bored. I'll go and get a stick and chew on a stick. So what we need to do is, first of all, identify if there is any of those other anxiety-inducing situations. And you've got to think about it from the dog's point of view. Anything at all that's changed. And it could be, you know, the dog next door barks more or something, you know, completely out of your control.
Yeah.
Someone else in the household, someone changed their deodorant or perfume or something. Anything that could just change that little micro environment, and that can induce some stress. You know, you're leaving for work earlier or something could be an issue as well. These are the kind of things that can give dogs those anxiety-inducing behaviours. And further to that, then you said she doesn't like to play with any toys.
No, she has been a rescue girl. We got her at about two, so we've had her about 2 years. She's quite happy in her life, but yes, obviously something's...
So what I would suggest is, if there's no favourite toy that she has, I'm going to suggest we go back to an old favourite of mine, and that is a Kong.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Okay, so you need two, and we want to put some food in the Kong, wrap it in plastic, maybe a bit of Vegemite on the end, and wrap it in plastic, put it in the freezer, and then the next day when she brings in a twig, ask her to sit, take the twig away and give her the Kong.
Okay.
So she's getting a reward. We don't want her to get into the habit of bringing you lots of twigs all the time, but basically it's a way for her to stop bringing the twigs in, and you're giving her this as a way to keep her active during the day.
Okay. Just another thing too, you were talking about them lying in the sun. Well, she loves lying in the sun. We get the morning sun in and she lies in that. Is she getting enough, like, vitamin D and that from just doing it inside? Because she likes to be in the comfort.
So just very quickly on vitamin D, it's a fascinating chemical in our body. So we get it from our food, but it's inactive. So it's a compound called cholecalciferol, and it's inactive. And what happens is it gets into the skin, and then the UV rays hit it, and it converts it into the active form. So that's where the sunlight is very important.
Yes.
Okay. So first of all, your commercial diet, and I'm going to say vegetables are actually going to be a good source of vitamin D as well, but they're activated by the sunlight. Now, in colder climates, and certainly when you're closer to the poles, far north Europe and things like that, or when it's very cloudy, we have had a cloudy winter, I suppose, then if you have long-term where you're getting no sunlight, you can actually develop problems with vitamin D deficiencies, and that would show up as soft bones. So kind of like rickets, which is more in growing animals. But I don't think we would have had the extent of restricted sunlight that you would need to be a real problem.
Oh, okay.
So yes. I think you're fine. And just quietly too, because we're talking about vitamin D, anyone who was listening earlier, Cheryl, I would say we don't want people to run out and start supplementing their dogs with vitamin D, because it can actually be toxic and it can cause calcium deposits in the kidneys. So let's just go with some sunlight.
Yes, absolutely. But they can get the sunlight even having a walk, David. So, you know, you can be out walking, you know, as long as you're not walking in the hottest part of the day. But, you know, that exposure to some sunshine, it's really going to help the dogs absorb that through their skin.
And for Margaret's concern too, good for mental health.
Yes. The other thing is, Margaret, I don't know if you've got many birds around at the moment, but the birds are really breeding, and there's a lot of activity. And with that activity comes displacement of twigs and things from trees. So it could be that that your little dog is bringing in those twigs in because of the activity from the birds.
Oh, that could be it, because when we're out walking, she'll often stop and sniff where birds have done their business.
Yes. So that's for her, she's got a job to do and she's cleaning up the twigs.
Thanks for your call, Margaret. We appreciate it. Bye-bye. Have a good day. Next on the line, we have Nick from Wood Rising. Hi, Nick. Thanks for holding. How can we help you?
Yeah, hi. It's Mick. My call's Mick.
Oh, g'day, mate.
Yeah, I've got a golden retriever. He's Charlie's 11 years old. And, you know, he's, over his lifetime, he's had a few of these hot spots that have been treated with Neocort quite successfully.
Yep.
But about 2 years ago, he got what was diagnosed as hot spots on his left ear and then subsequently on his right ear on the earlobe. The one on the left is about the size of a 50-cent coin, much smaller on the right-hand side. And I clear it up fairly well with Neocort. There might be the tiniest little bit of scab left there.
Yep.
But it just keeps coming back. As soon as I stop the Neocort, it comes back again. No hair grows there anymore. It's just pink flesh.
Is this right down on the tip, or is it back right in the middle? It is.
No, right on the tip.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And even recently, he had a hot spot on his cheek, and I cleared that up within a week or so.
Yeah.
But on the ears, it just never seems to go away.
So the ears are, as you said, a real chronic problem, and particularly when we get this cycle of irritation or inflammation followed by infection. And I'm just wondering whether you've noticed, do you get problems with flies over summer around those ears?
No, not at all.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
He's out, you know, walking at least 2 or 3 hours a day. He's in good nick otherwise.
Yeah.
And inside, he's an inside dog during the rest of the time.
Yeah, it's not and it may be just a kind of semantic thing about labelling it, but it's not an area I usually see hot spots on. So just very quickly, a hot spot is kind of the name we give to what's properly termed acute traumatic pyodermatitis. That's it. So a couple of things. One is it's acute. Which means it just comes up really quickly. And that sounds like the one on his cheek, right? The traumatic is that there's an element there where the dog is either constantly scratching or rubbing or something that's inflaming the skin. Mm-hmm. And so that might be part of this as well. But then pyodermatitis, so dermatitis, inflammation of the skin, pyo means that there's bacteria. So... Yep. It's this combination where we get inflammation, bacteria, irritation, self-trauma, and it happens very quickly. So when we see these areas on the end of the earlobes, and that's why I asked about flies, the ones I've seen have almost always been flies or mosquitoes or biting midges that are causing problems, because the tips of the ears have a lot of trouble healing, because the blood supply is really only coming from one direction.
Yep.
And, you know, once it gets inflamed, the blood supply can start to get interrupted. And so you get this area of skin that just doesn't heal properly. As you said, the hair follicles are gone. You know, you can keep it under control with some steroid cream. So the Neocort is an antibacterial, antifungal and steroid cream. It's not the best long-term for the skin. It works really well with some of those, but the problem is that you then get into a cycle where you need it all the time.
I think that's the cycle I'm in, yeah.
Yeah. So does he scratch it all the time, or?
He used to. He doesn't seem to scratch it very much.
Okay.
Sometimes down in the park he'll rub his side of his face in the grass.
Yeah, yeah.
Not else, yeah.
And it's probably something I would really need to look at. As I said, I think there's enough grey areas here that it's not something that I could easily, and, you know, skin problems are almost always visual problems. So I think this is something I'd be saying, see what the vet can talk to you. But my best advice here is we want to reduce the Neocort and start to look at alternatives to keep that skin healthy. Some dogs need just regular washing with an antibacterial shampoo. Some need dietary supplements with zinc and sulfur and selenium. And those, so there are actually some additives you can put in their diet that'll help. But it's still, you're still going to have problems. It doesn't matter. And I've even seen dogs where we've had to do surgery to cut away the piece of skin that is just not healing. So, that's...
The last vet I saw suggested that, she did a cytology, you know, under the microscope.
Yeah.
said it was an infection, da 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 da, and then raise the possibility of cancer and lopping off her ears.
Well, we do. It can actually be where the cancer is secondary to the fact that it's chronically exposed to the sun, since we're talking about sun today, and also because it's just chronically irritated. If you have chronic inflammation, you can end up with the development of some types of skin tumours. So, you know, at this stage, I've seen that happen, particularly in cats. We do that a lot in cats. So I think this is one I'd be going back to the vet and saying, look, I don't want to keep using the Neocort. What can we be doing?
This is Pet Chat on 2NURFM. We're just going to check out our pets of the week. If you head to our website, you'll find them there under the lifestyle programs. And we're going to start with Jerry. Jerry is a beautiful looking cat, ginger cat.
He is cute. Now, I'm going to be not a wet blanket, but if when people jump on and have a look at Jerry, they'll notice his nose is a little bit pink. And since we were just chatting a minute ago, with Mick at Wood Rising about his dog's ears. We got to keep an eye on cats' noses and their ears because cats get sun cancers.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's very important to keep an eye on them. Not all of them, obviously.
Yeah.
But
and we're
not
saying that Jerry has
cancer. He looks fine. Yeah. He looks fine.
Jerry's beautiful.
Yeah. Seems that, Jerry is a cat that likes other cats. He likes to meet other cats, I know, and very good at reading body language, loves a cuddle. I'm not sure too many cats don't, as long as you know when to stop.
It's on their terms.
Because they'll let you know. Got a bit of a playful side. He's looking for a busy household and probably not with very young children. And it does seem that he could cope on his own, but would probably also do well with another cat to play with. So
he's beautiful.
Keep an eye on Jerry. He's going places.
He is going places, hopefully to a new home. Now, next we've got Macy, a beautiful two-year-old Rottweiler cross.
Yeah, and Macy's going to be another ball of trouble, right? Like a bigger dog, 30-kilo dog. So, again, not young kids, but certainly an energetic family. I think one of the things that they said on here was that they were just doing a testing for compatibility with other dogs. So keep an eye on the website, 2NURFM, because that'll get updated when we get more info, but certainly a happy-looking dog.
Yeah, and they pretty much just say, kids over 10 due to some jumping, patient and dedicated family, no cats or pocket pets, and secure fencing. And, go to 2NURFM.com.au to check those Pets of the Week out. And that is it for Pet Chat for today.
Thanks, Amanda.
Thank you. We'll catch up with you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.